Sometime in 2022, there came this groundswell of enthusiasm for a nascent technology that was certainly going to restructure the world as we knew it. The previous October, in fact, Facebook changed its very name to reflect this paradigm. You were seeing commercials broadcast during football games about it. All the FANG companies, that would be Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google, seemed to be working towards their own specific vision of this most revolutionary of new technologies, the metaverse. The public quickly got tired of the term, the marketing buzzwords, the false promises, the videos of Mark Zuckerberg sitting in a virtual conference room and enthusiastically changing his avatar's shirt from gray to slate blue. For all the revolution that was promised, the metaverse was little more than a whimpering pup. In truth, the metaverse is a tricky concept, one we'll get into more detail on in today's episode. And it's even now kind of exclusively used by certain niche techie communities. The barrier to entry technologically is high, the use cases are limited, but I wrote about all this in a 2022 article, A Brief History of Virtual Value, so I won't rehash the whole thing. Know only this, there is very much still a metaverse, and when the buzz all went away, the metaverse became presided over by a handful of truly enthusiastic innovators. These are developers, they are artists, they are philosophers of a sort, community engagers, and two of them are on the podcast today. Rizzle and Nifty Time, also known as Matt, are the creators and hosts of the longest running metaverse meetup anywhere, the WIP meetup, running every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific time since 2019. There's one this week, next week, and I would bet there would be one every week on into the distant future. These are two crypto art OGs, true believers in the power of crypto art and the metaverse, and they've demonstrated that time and again in their actions and concepts and abilities to bring people together, to energize them, and to build a passionate audience within the quote-unquote metaverse. Colborne and I are today talking with Rizzle and Nifty Time about all things metaverse, the history of the WIP meetup, its changing faces, and how those faces reflect the changing metaverse. It's a jam-packed episode with a couple of true legends, and we're excited to have you here with us for this metaverse-centric episode of Mocha Live. Good afternoon, everybody. It is 3 o'clock on the dot p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. Cloudy Brooklyn, New York, but warm Brooklyn, New York. My name is Max Cohen. It's the Mocha Live podcast that you are tuning into. We are so happy to have you here. Thanks for being with us. I would like to introduce our roundtable of guests and co-hosts today. I am Max. Joining me, as always, my co-host, trusty co-host, and founder of the Museum of Crypto Art. That would be Mr. Colborne Bell. What's up, Colborne?
Pleasure.
Very nice Japanese Edo style woodblock print background you got going on there.
We've been cooking in the Mocha Labs.
We have been cooking in the Mocha Labs, and that is the proof. And joining us today as well are two of my favorite folks in crypto art, if I can just speak plainly. Always valuable insight, constant contributions for this, like, everything is okay, the sky is not falling kind of sturdiness. They are the hosts of the longest running ever metaverse meetup, the WIP meetup, every Thursday at noon since 2019, going on 5 years now. So please welcome to the show, Rizzle, and the creative lead at Nifty Gateway, Matt, or Nifty Time. Matt, do you prefer Nifty Time or do you prefer Matt?
It really doesn't matter. All right. Whatever's more comfortable.
Sounds great. Matt, aka Nifty Time, Rizzle, thanks so much for being here. Super psyched.
Yo, thank you so much for having us here, man. It's awesome. I mean, we've been in the same circles for a long time, so awesome to hop on the podcast and riff with y'all.
Yeah, hell yeah. Let's just send it. So, you know, I really want to talk about the metaverse today, a conversation topic that I feel like is oft lost in the shuffle, especially today, as like the buzz and the hullabaloo around the metaverse has kind of died down a bit, even in our own circles. So I just kind of want to start baseline with like a diagnosis of where the metaverse is today, because obviously we all know it had this moment in 2022, 2023, where it felt like the next big thing. It was being posited as the next big thing. And then that kind of faded away as people, I think, en masse, especially like the general public, realized the tech isn't really where it needs to be. So just off the cuff, maybe Rizzle, you can start us off, but like, how are we feeling about the metaverse here on March 20th, 2024 at 3:02 PM EST?
This is cool, man. I feel like I'm genuinely interested in hearing Matt's take on this as well. Normally, we're lobbing questions at each other. So I'm curious to see what his take is because, you know, like you said, we've been deep in it for a while, man. I don't know, man. I feel like the metaverse, in terms of at least the Web3 metaverse that most of us are talking about, is like still pretty limited to tech enthusiasts and people who are just genuinely interested in what we think it can become and putting all the pieces together of like how we know we want this thing to sort of flesh out over time, which I guess in terms of specifics, I'm talking about just like, you know, interoperability, digital ownership, people being able to, you know, interact with the virtual world in like a truly like crypto native, blockchain native way. So I feel like in terms of that becoming a reality, we're much closer than we've ever been. There's a lot of cool things going on and, you know, progressions in the tech and entries into the space that make me feel like we're still moving in that direction. But in terms of actually getting there and serving that up to the general public in a way that's like, wow, this is like a vastly different way to experience digital ownership. I think we're pretty far out and still talking to like the nerd enthusiast crowd for the most part. But yeah, we'd love to hear Matt's take on this, man.
State of the metaverse. Yeah, it's you're starting to finally experience a lot of the early promise and like expectations circa like 2019, 2020, 2021 especially, of what I think a lot of people assumed the metaverse would or should be like, which is some sort of persistent digital space where folks can do things together. And you're seeing a lot of the gaming side really come to the forefront and just a lot of tools that allow, especially digital builders, to put together pretty compelling-ish digital experiences and games. HyperFi and Nifty Island in particular over the past year or so have really started to separate themselves, in my personal opinion, as places that allow for larger groups to come together to play interesting games. And like what Rizzo was talking about, poured in some of these digital assets and avatars that folks may have been collecting over the years and have kind of embedded or associated with their online or digital identities, which is an interesting thing. But there's still this other current that's non-game focused, that's kind of been persistent since the beginning, going back to at least in like my like metaverse lived experience to CryptoVoxels, where it was artist led. It almost felt like a weird late 1970s, early 1980s, like New York City, grungy, gritty, like dark, but like somehow full of art and bright with that kind of promise. And that strain has also continued on. You have these like bleeding edge builders that want to create non-gaming experiences in this kind of persistent digital state. And like an example that's coming up and has been a bright spot for me in particular is being led in part by Bay Backner and the folks at the Mesh Art Fair and actually Decentraland these days, where they're bringing artists in to create like immersive digital experiences that take you somewhere else and that are meant to make the digital avatar that is yourself wandering through these spaces feel something interesting, new, novel. So it's interesting. And it's definitely, yeah, very, very much a nerdy kind of niche, but also very cool because you have a lot of artists, 3D modelers in particular, really trying to push the boundaries of what's possible experientially. And it's also like getting fucking fun on the gaming side. Still a long way to go, still a lot of rough edges, but we're in a much better place, I think, overall, as someone that's trying to have like fun in these spaces week in, week out. You're starting to have more of that fun as opposed to like clicking URL, floating around a room, maybe like doing a weird dance. Now we're actually doing things together for longer periods of time as opposed to waiting to do those things.
I mean, Colborne, I'd like your opinion on this too. Just, you know, you've talked in the pod about how like the museum itself started basically as like a Somnium Space plot that had like an actual museum space in it. And, you know, because you have that, again, such a specific background in like using the metaverse and especially like Somnium, Crypto Voxels era. Like, what is your take on like this moment that we're in?
You know, we are persistently in the metaverse. We're in a metaverse space right now. I think what everybody wants is the reductive version of like the metaverse. You know, we want the Ready Player One experience where we're all in there together. But the truth of the matter is we're moving through these fragments of digital worlds and trying to stitch them together. It's just like, where are all of our friends? We're in a metaverse space. There's 100 people listening to this right now live. And we just want to be like in it. We want to see them. We want to maybe be in like an untitled XYZ Greco-Roman amphitheater. You know, we want cheers and applause and all of this, but we're in it. And it maybe feels like dipping our toes in the water, but we have this idea of this thing that is supposed to exist. But the fact of the matter is we're also building interoperably for a variety of options. Now, you know, these things are going to ebb and flow, and I don't know, that's it. Is it more advanced or less advanced than, you know, where we were in Somnium space? It's just different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coalescing around the needs of people who are so keen to always be on the cutting edge and explore in different areas, it's very much like herding cats.
Well said. I've never heard that phrase before.
Can I interject there? I think Colborne touched on a really important point, especially when he said, like, we're technically in the metaverse right now. I think the metaverse is one of these weird throw around terms that means something to everyone and nothing to everyone. And I think trying to define it helps. And that statement really hit it on the nose for me. Like, we're in there right now. And I like to define the metaverse as any digital space where you live, work, and play. Probably say like a persistent digital space where you can go back to over and over, which like X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, it falls in that category, or like any of these virtual worlds that have popped up over the years. Really anywhere on the like any digital destination in my mind that you kind of go back to over and over qualifies there. So that really opens up the aperture of like what the metaverse is and what you can do in all these fragments. I think that's probably like a helpful way to think about it.
I always just think about it as, you know, like, or I guess I think about what we don't have currently, which is, you know, we can't all decide to go, you know, we're talking about buying bed frames or, I don't know, headboards for beds or desks or some furniture, right? And we can't all go together into a furniture store site and like go pick out things together, right? Once we leave these like little nexuses where there is a metaverse, whether that's social media, whether it's these like metaverse spaces, then you lose that kind of like shared digital experience. It ends pretty much outside of certain very siloed websites and URLs. Like outside of there, we're once again kind of like solo in this experience. And even like when we're on Twitter, when we're in this, you know, Restream space right now, you know, we're here together, but we're also not here together. And I think when I conceptualize the metaverse, it's so much more all-encompassing on like an experiential level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, man. This is sort of where I'd like to pick apart the jargon a little bit, because I feel like, you know, when we talk about like virtual worlds and like shared experiences and everything, there are a lot of things that check those boxes that, in my opinion, aren't really like the same as the metaverse we're like building towards. We're like, the common thread really is like digital interoperability and some sort of like thread that runs between the whole thing, where like, you know, you take your stuff from one place to another, and maybe just hopping on a Restream or something like that you don't necessarily need to, you know, quote unquote, enter the metaverse. But there have been like virtual destination, virtual worlds, sort of like canned versions of, you know, a Web3 version of the metaverse, where, you know, you've got like, you know, tokenomics and ways to like, you know, do virtual meetups and, you know, gift things to people and that whole kind of thing. But, you know, when we're talking about what we're building towards, I feel like without that whole layer and people being able to access that layer, which is another sticking point, I feel like, you know, and I don't think there's right or wrong answers, but, you know, some people, you say metaverse and it's Ready Player One, strap on the headset, that's final destination and end goal. But, you know, I think it's a combination of like, just ways that are accessible for people to get involved in that greater like Web3 metaverse economy. And for a lot of people, that's going to be accessing the metaverse in some, you know, 2D variation on a mobile phone that, you know, can handle low res potato graphics, but it still allows them to participate in the metaverse, so to speak, where they can, you know, spin up a digital economy for themselves, interact with their friends, figure out how to, you know, find where all their people are to, you know, participate on that type of scale. So I don't know. I feel like that's the nuance that's like a lot different from what we've had, you know, 10 years ago, which is like sort of the metaverse, but like doesn't have that additional layer that makes that sort of ties it all together.
Yeah, I think that's a I really appreciate you making that distinction between like metaverse and virtual worlds. And, you know, Rizzle and Colborne, you both brought up Ready Player One. And I think if you actually think about what that looks like, the metaverse itself is just a version of the internet where multiple digital experiences are connected in kind of like a central nexus, right? And instead of having these like web pages that you're jumping between all these apps. So, you know, I haven't read or seen Ready Player One, but I'm aware that like there's racing and there's like housing and whatever, you know, you're in these different spaces, but you're essentially living and spending your time in a participatory space, a kind of like middle space between all these different apps, which are connected in a kind of like quasi physical digital reality. And that I think is so far away. We have all these virtual worlds, but again, they're all siloed from each other, which I think actually,
I mean, it's not so, I'll push back on that because it's not so far away, because when you begin to think of, and I haven't really played this, but what GTA 5 did online, in which it was like MMORPG where people had houses and cars and would go rob banks and do missions. And it's like kind of there. The fabric is there. We have all of the elements. It's about consensus of what is that metaverse space and who is going to control it, if anybody.
Well, ideally, it's like, you know, it's like the web, right? Where it's, there are arbiters of like how you approach the web, like you use browsers, but there is no owner of like the World Wide Web itself, or maybe there is, but
not. But that's the shift. That's the shift from 2 to 3, right? That's Web 2 to Web 3. That's 2D to 3D. That's how we translate everything into environment.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's thinking like porting certain experiences a little bit too skeuomorphically onto the future state of like what's possible virtually. Like, yeah, the actual environments, making them more persistent where you can walk around and do things and you come back to like certain locations, that's definitely part of it. But I don't know, something else about like the identity layer also being portable in there. I don't know if it's like a combination thereof, but it's something more than that over time, like, I don't know, accruing history, taking that with you. But like there are actual owners of a lot of these spaces and like virtual worlds, right? I don't know if there's ever going to be a true like decentralized, like there's a space where everyone's sort of there. No one really owns it. People can have stakes in it, blah, 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 which is sort of what it sounded like you're going in that direction. But I'm not too sure how actually like possible that is. Or
yeah,
like
I think that's the way we've always wanted to build the museum, for example, yeah. Right? As kind of like a co-owned public good in which anybody can spin up any instance of it, and it's just as like valid due to its decentralized nature. But you know, we are exponents away in energy, effort, and desire, like to be this type of species.
Yeah, dude, I think it sort of fleshes out, like I feel like this version of the metaverse that we're all sort of driving at here is only really something that can be fleshed out like sort of organically, and is not really something that someone's going to build for us that's going to finally be the shoe that fits. And it's like sort of a reverse paradigm, because you know, right now the users already have all the assets, right? We have all the things in our wallets, 3D assets, 2D assets, tokens, like all this shit, all the building blocks of the metaverse are already in the user's hands. And I think, you know, for the user, the metaverse doesn't really inherently live anywhere, but it's a combination of all of these things that allow you to use your building blocks in various capacities that you can access in like different places. And I feel like we're finally starting to see platforms bending to the users a little bit where, you know, new things that are being spun up, there's a little bit of peer pressure now for them to, you know, integrate VRMs and interoperable file types, because now they know they're going to tap into a user base that already has like all that shit. So I think it's like sort of a snowball effect and like a slow burn. But as that just sort of momentum slowly increases over time, I feel like it's the inevitable course of events where like, you've got a solid batch of users, you're trying to launch a thing, the you know, it just makes dollars and cents. The lowest effort way for you to do it is to tap into that user base in a way that you know you can instantly. And so I think we're all doing a pretty good job of like arming ourselves with the building blocks to do all these things, but all those things are still sort of being built out all over the place.
I guess I would just say in response to all of this that like, there's an economic viability to creating some kind of, again, central nexus to all of these digital experiences. You know, Colburn, you mentioned GTA 5. You know, let's say Rizzle, you make like a frog avatar. You should be able to port that, ideally, right? Own that asset and port it into all these different virtual worlds, right? Because you're known by a single identity throughout all of these various, you know, platforms, games, virtual worlds, etc. And the same way that like, you know, a new website is not trying to convince people to come to the internet. They're trying to convince people on the internet to come to them. I think what we're missing is this rising tide that lifts all boats, right? We're missing that kind of like connective tissue that it is like an economic incentive for all of these virtual world platforms to help build together. Because once you get people into that, like, I don't know, Grand Central Station of the quote unquote metaverse, then you're going to be able to start advertising these apps, bringing people into these worlds, like buying, selling, marketing, all sorts of different experiences, assets, etc. So I think that was a really important point, Rosa, that like there is an economic incentive to like just getting people in on like some kind of like central arena. But let's jump away from this for just a sec, because I do want to talk about like the WIT meetup in some detail, because you know, I'm curious, especially as we've talked about like where the metaverse is today versus like how it's being conceived before, like the WIT meetup is in its fifth year. And I am curious from Rizzle and Matt, both of your perspectives, like what are the differences, not just in like graphics, but in like the actual experience of the earliest meetups, which I imagine were in CryptoVoxels or Decentraland, versus now where they're in HyperFi, they're, you know, graphically so much further above, you can do so many more things. Matt, maybe you could start us off with that answer.
Yeah, I mean, it literally started out in 2019 in the old archaic chat on scent.co. Like you could only see maybe like four or five different people talking before like the conversation just totally disappeared. And like Scent, for folks that didn't use it, was like a crypto-powered blog basically. So it was very asynchronous in its communication. People made posts, people replied to it. There was a global chat, but there was this kind of like spirit of community that was forming there, and people that were doing things that were quite interesting and all around the world. And at the time, I just really wanted to kind of bring everyone or whoever could participate together in the same point in time so we could talk about what everyone was doing a little bit more efficiently. And then in the chat, when people did actually show up, one day in, I think it was like November 2019, it was like super unwieldy for the reasons I just mentioned. So at the time, CryptoVoxels was like the first place that it popped to my mind where, oh, we can all jump in there. It's just a URL click away. And they have a chat feature there that's a little bit better. And that's what we did. And it was like a group of five, six, seven of us, two handfuls. And we were just like flying around Origin City, because it was just Origin City, like a big square at the time. And it was fun. People just kind of typed in what they were doing, and it was nothing special, but there was the kernel of something more that I saw. And we just played it back again, starting in the beginning of 2020 on Thursday, 12 p.m. Pacific, even though I was in Seoul, South Korea at the time. And just kept doing it. And then when Rizzle and Jim and TokenSmart joined up with us, like Audio first entered the scene in April 2020, and that just totally changed the dynamic. You could have people come like dressed as their weird crypto voxel avatar floating around space in Origin City and giving updates. Like we had Geo from Axie Infinity, Josie, all the old builders and artists swung through it. But it was just people floating, like giving Audio updates. Like you're in the metaverse, but it was nothing really special there. Like to a someone unfamiliar just popping in, not really getting it. But fast forward, I think, to everything that Rizzle, myself, and the whole Whip crew and everyone that's like part of the Whip fam has helped kind of add to the show. Like now we're in HyperFi. We have a space that is gorgeous to look at, like full of sculptures from arts and artists and posters from past presenters. And it's this like living space, it feels like. And the ability to have like programmatic game experiences in there where you see everyone together running around again. Like it's, you play GTA or Fortnite, like you've seen this before. But the fact that this is our space, our neck of the woods, where we can keep coming back to and take people to other places, that's been the real evolution. Just to have the whole kind of family together with you throughout the years. Some people pop, fall off, come back when they will, but we have this home that people can keep returning to. It's been a special thing to be a part of from my perspective. And it feels like we're just getting started. Rizzo and I, we talk about the shit every week. Feels like we're repeating ourselves over and over, but again, it just feels more and more exciting, especially with every passing week.
Dude, in the beginning, I mean, co-signing on everything that Matt said, pretty much, you know, and we still, you know, despite we have a home base now in HyperFi, and just having a home base is sort of new to us over this past year, which has been nice, where, you know, we got a solid build crew who is customizing the parcel for each event. So we still go to Crypto Voxels. We were in there, you know, a few weeks ago, and I feel like we've done a pretty good job of staying metaverse agnostic, in the spirit of just showing off cool stuff to our audience and taking them on field trips and delivering experiences and everything. But the home base, being located in HyperFi has been a game changer, and being able to customize the parcel and curate events and everything in there. You know, in the very beginning, it was like just enough to get everybody in one place listening to a quality speaker. And that was like enough to get an audience like in there in early days, because they just getting everyone in there without it breaking was a thing. And then there weren't like a whole lot of like social media outlets, podcasts, Twitter spaces wasn't a thing. And so there's a lot of like creators and creativity going on with nowhere to actually like talk about what they're doing, or no good outlet for them to reach an audience or anything. So, you know, I feel like that's another reason why early on people were just so excited to hear from creators in the space and be in the same space with them. And, you know, just that concept was like such a new thing and uncharted territory. And now, of course, you know, as the space has grown, there's, you know, tons of things out there for people to, you know, sort of get their, you know, message out there. So I think over the years, the Whip has really transformed into having like a really dope experiential layer, like woven into the experience each week, where, you know, it's not just people showing up and listening to an interesting speaker, but our builder has either decked out the parcel with some sort of interactive component based on that week's theme, or we've got like a cool creator on that has a spot for us to visit that they're going to take us a tour on, or show us like some cool demo or some shit like that or whatever. So we've definitely been mindful of like trying to evolve with the evolving metaverse. And now that it works better and is more experiential in general, trying to lean into, you know, just the cool stuff we can for our audience.
You know, when we were a couple months into the podcast, and I was really kind of interested in like, well, I was really inspired by coming onto the Whip meetup and seeing the professionalism that you guys had brought to this space, right? You know, you have a theme song, you have guests, you've have this like very internalized, well-wrought format, like well-thought-out format. Everything's calculated. Everything generally runs smoothly. You can see like the experience in there. And as somebody like starting this podcast, you know, where we didn't know how to have a podcast, we're just kind of learning on the fly. That was very kind of inspiring to me to see that you had invented a kind of professionalism in a place that doesn't have hard and fast rules. Because you talk about like coming to that point of like getting this down pat to the point that, you know, it's so polished and kind of smooth and well understood.
I'm like laughing my ass off on the inside to hear those descriptors.
Yeah, it's so good. Just let it go, man.
All of those things were emergent, especially from the Whip crew, like Paradox and Show. They're the ones that, and Dragonate, that put together and commissioned those theme songs for the different segments that kind of naturally took shape over time. The only thing that has been driving the, or like that I contributed from back in the day, was just the consistency. Like, all right, y'all, we're going to meet up every Thursday. And then around that consistency, that kind of like experience that everyone could keep coming back to, the crew emerged. Like after Rizzle and Jim, Dragonate, are the audio engineer who's been, saved the Whip back in 2020 from falling off the rails. Because I mean, if you stick around for the Whip every week, the end of it, we have Jonathan Mann, aka Song of Day Man, sing Death of Audio Problems. And that's a throwback to the early 2020 when it was just like, I can't even tell you, it was like 4 or 5 a.m. in Korea. I'm like, oh my God, is it going to work? Can people hear like any of these updates? Like, what will happen? And just a few weeks in a row of just fucking failing, Dragonate reached out and said, hey, I think I can help sort your audio problems. And he did. And audio has been smooth ever since and just got better. And then you have like Paradox, the videographer of the metaverse, who has been documenting and filming and recording these meetups and like editing them together for like cool weekly like snapshots into the past week's Whip. Like that's all emergent from the crew. But again, emergent because there's this body that continues to resurface, or space that resurfaces every week at 12 p.m. Pacific. It's been wild. And then really the show with the afties at the end, like yelling at everyone, totally different kind of tenor and character of the show. That's just, I don't know, it's fun. It's different. It's weird. People are shocked. Yeah.
Dude, we've been very fortunate that like what we do has resonated with enough people that people just have come out of the woodwork over the years and just want to contribute. Like, you know, Fabiano and his wife Patrizia have been making wearables at a weekly clip for us to just give away to our audience, like everyone who signs the guest book every week. And you know, same thing Matt was saying about Show. Like, you know, early on, Show just identified a need. He was like, you know, after the Whip ends, there's a lot of people just hanging out. Like, mm-hmm. you know, why don't we just do a bit afterwards for people who just want to chill and, you know, do something different. And so, you know, the Whip as in its current state is absolutely just sort of organic growth that has, you know, some has fallen off over the years, some has, you know, come on over the years, but, you know, we've got like roughly 12 people now who are like pretty committed at a weekly clip to contributing something. You know, so some people can do more than others, but we've been very fortunate that, like, you know, people have just been very proactive and compelled to, you know, help us out. And we encourage that, man. You know, people who dig what we do, we're not making any money. We've actually done a pretty poor job of that. But people appreciate what is going on and our consistency and us highlighting cool creators and everything. So it's a very community driven thing. But because of that, I feel like the vibes are as good as they've ever been, if not the best they've ever been.
Yeah. And shout out like Metageist, who's come like a proper artist who just creates amazing 3D art, has come in and like really elevating a lot of the building together with Paradox. And everyone gets something out of this, right? So the fact that we have this thing that we can depend on each week where all of our names are right there, even if we don't have like the biggest audience, like we bring pretty banging guests with regularity. So there's always going to be attention and eyes. And for especially artists in the space, like being able to kind of not go it alone and not have to like, you know, force it on social media, like, hey, I'm still here, I'm still building. Like it's really helpful for a lot of reasons to kind of just find a fun thing to join in and contribute to. And yeah, like actually tangibly see the results and people experiencing your art and yeah, vibing with it. So it's that angle and that dynamic is always rewarding and really fun to see. And it's just a better way to kind of like be present and make sure that folks know that you're still here, still doing your thing and like literally seeing what you're doing.
This leads into a question that I'm really interested in to hear all of your opinions on, which is like, how do you grow an audience or like a base of adherence in the metaverse when, as we've been discussing, like the barrier to entry is still so high tech-wise? What is that thing that draws an audience together? I don't think any of us have any illusions that like the audiences we're going for are small, but very loyal, tight-knit, and like familial. Colborne, do you have any opinion on that up front?
Well, this goes back to a point I wanted to make earlier about intention, and it's what are people's intentions in coming to these spaces to begin with, right? We know, obviously, that speculation is a huge driver, but none of us have proven really to be incredibly great at the speculative game. So we turn to what we're good at, which I think is being honest and authentic and trying to like explore a rapidly shifting landscape with people who are also honest and authentic in doing the same and consistent, right? So like these are people that have been here for years. They've showed up for the right reasons. They've proven themselves to be like high caliber quality individuals, and like attracts like. So it seems to have rendered itself into these two camps, right? There are people that are driving like influence for speculation or are playing with a different set of money for a different set of rules. And there are people that come from a different cloth that cares more about like the interpersonal connection and discovering what this new fabric and evolution of where we're going as humans on like a transhumanist journey into the unknown. And that takes like a lot of love and a lot of compassion. And these two people like above and to my left have certainly, and you of course, Max, have like proven, you know, to be like wonderful, beautiful stewards of humans in a time of great change.
Yo, thank you, man. You know, the strategy to grow the audience and the strategy to do what we want to do, I think we're sort of different things, and we actually had a crossroads for it like several years ago. But you know, I think if you're trying to grow the audience in something like this, you know, the playbook is you get bigger and bigger guests on and leverage their like, you know, social media presence, blah 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 blah, and you know, continue to chase bigger fish and absorb their audience, et cetera, et cetera. And we really like early on, we had an opportunity to sort of go that path and sort of, you know, lend ourselves more to that like speculative degen-y type of crowd. You know, early on when I co-founded NFT42, we had you know, produced the first V Friends you know, whatever collection or whatever. So suddenly like Gary V, Snoop, like all these people in that camp were like circling the waters and in the wheelhouse, and you know, we, you know, had the opportunity to chase some of these big influencers who would bring their crowd you know, into the whip. And I don't know, it ended up not being what Matt and I were most passionate about and interested in, which is like really shining a light on people who are on the bleeding edge, who, you know, maybe under the radar, but who are genuinely doing the most cool, awesome shit that we are generally excited about and want to experience and everything, which wasn't that, man. And I feel like sticking to that has not grown our audience significantly, but it has solidified our audience significantly in them appreciating what we're doing, knowing that they can count on us for that. And it never gets old, man. We were in Voxel Living's spot in Crypto Voxels like a month ago or something, who, you know, is a newer creator to the scene, but appreciates all the stuff that we've been doing and has a lot of dope contributions. And to support someone like that, who's just like, you know, they just kept saying over and over again, like, man, it's so cool to have so many people in here looking at my art. And oh, my God, like, I never imagined this would happen. And, you know, that vibe and not losing that vibe, I think, has been important and never really gets old for me, at least.
Yeah, for me, it comes down to the types of games that you want to focus on playing. I think a lot of people in the space are focused on short-term speculative games, and those types of games, like, you need scale to win, right? And it's a slog to get to scale if you ever get there, and then you're dumping on someone inevitably, right? It's just not a fun game, and it's again not a long-term game, and that's not a game that I've ever wanted to play. I never play those fucking games. They suck. It's really not fun. And I would have burned out long ago if that's what I was optimizing for. Versus what's effectively an infinite game of, oh, what's new in the space now that I think is interesting personally, that I can bring through here, introduce to a few other folks that also are focused on bleeding edge shit and doing weird things. Like that's something that's effectively you can keep doing forever. And there's maybe not the largest amount of people that are interested in that thing, but there's enough people that make it worthwhile for new projects coming through, having a larger number than they have, number of like testers or like vibe checkers and things like that. And the interesting thing with that approach, with respect to the whip, is that over time, like the projects that we've introduced to people, like going back to November 2020, pre-launch art blocks, when Snowfro came through and everyone was able to mint beta squiggles. And the beta squiggles that they minted, they could get right off of, like when mainnet launched, they could get airdropped to them what they had minted on beta, the testnet. And then again, like it was like super cheap back. It was like 0.0015 or something to mint a squiggle anyway. So it wasn't a huge like reward at the time, but the whip fam that held on to those, like they got a big win. Jiho, when he came through with Axie Infinity, they had launched AXS at the time. We made it rain on everyone with AXS when it was like less than a dollar. People held on to that last bull. People made bank. Countless examples there of just being early, having fun, and then being rewarded, not out of some speculative desire, but because they were playing a different game. And because it is a game, there's sometimes rewards, right? So I think it really does come down to that. And we're blessed that we don't need to focus on scale. It's just we focus on the game that we like. And as long as it's a game that has some people that like to play, you're good. And it's sustainable in like the sense that you can keep doing it week in, week out. Like talking to Rizzle, it's not we're not getting paid. We're not paying ourselves, but it's fun talking with one another. And like listening to you, Max, and Colborn talk on Mocha, man, like you get into it. And it feels like that conversation in and of itself is probably energizing enough to keep this going, at least, not to mention like the mission of Mocha and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that was a beautiful thought. And it certainly energizes me. And what you guys do energizes me. What we get to do energizes me. This has been a very energizing conversation. We should start to wrap up. But Rizzle and Matt, I want to give you guys an opportunity to tell people listening, the people watching, what do you have going on? What should they know about y'all, whip, etc.? You want to just take the floor?
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, we have a Kraken whip on deck for tomorrow. Charles from Nifty Island swinging through. So again, that's a project that you've heard about, been curious about. Definitely swing through. Founder of the project. Hopefully, we'll spill some alpha there. Yeah, follow me Twitter, Nifty Time. Over on Firecaster, aka, or also like Warpcast is the main thing. Niftytime.eth, trying to be more active there. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, what he said. I'm at NFT Land on Twitter, and people should hit us up. You know, a lot of times, some of the coolest events and you know that we've had over the years are people who, from the community who have just hit us up and they have like a cool spot or a cool thing that they want to show off that they think our audience would like. And Matt and I take a look at it and we're like, hell yeah, that looks awesome. You know, how is this not on our radar? So the door is like very wide open. If people attend and they're like, hey, I can help out do this thing, or hey, this is a cool project y'all should check out, you know, and it's not some junk speculative shill fest type of thing, reach out to Matt and I, because that's what it's all about. So you know, thank you guys for having Matt and myself on. Really, really appreciate it. You know,
yeah, pleasure.
Really appreciate it.
And and the WIP meetup is at the WIP meetup on Twitter. That's WIP at the WIP meetup. All the information you need to know is right there. Rizzle, Matt, thank you very much. Colborn, thank you as always. Thanks everyone listening. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please give us a subscribe or a follow on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts from. All of these episodes are also available to mint for free on Zora, and it does seem to be L2 season, so please go over to Zora and collect this or any other episode we do. Please give our Substack a follow at museumofcrypto.substack.com. Please check out Rizzle, Matt, Colborn, myself. We all appreciate you being with us for this past 45 minutes. Colborn, any last words for the folks before we hit the road?
Let's get out of here.
All right, let's get out of here.
Ooh, can I get one last shill in, man? It'll take 2 seconds. I've been working on the WIP YouTube channel, uploading like classic content from all the stuff that we've been talking about back to early CryptoVoxels days and Paradox, a ton of stuff. So if you're interested in what it looked like then versus now, check that out, because I've been tagging all the things and uploading titles, and Mocha's on there when we had y'all on there. So check all the classic shit out.
That's crypto art history, baby.
Major. Right.
All right, we've given everyone a lot to chew on, a lot to look into. Thank you all very much, and we will see you all real soon. We appreciate everyone being with us. Take care.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you all.
This podcast was edited and produced by me, Max Cohen. I want to extend an immense thank you to Rizzle and Nifty Time for coming on to share their insight and experience, and to Colborn for being my stalwart co-host as always. Our intro and outro music today was composed by Julian Brangold, our cold open theme by Dayfox, and so another big thank you to them. And finally, thanks to you, all of you, for listening. We'll be back, same bat time, same bat channel next week, and we hope to have you with us then. So long.